listening to The Two with Tony and Myron. Estás escuchando Los Dos con Tony and Myron.
Listening to The Two on the BBS Radio Network. I'm your host, Myron, and my co-host, Tony.
Hello, hello.
And we thank you for joining us today. We've got a lot to cover today on the program, but before we do, Tony, why don't you tell our listeners what we have for them this week?
Okay, today we have something special for all the listeners out there. We're going to be giving away two tickets to go see the Texas Rangers and the Oakland A's, two of the hottest teams in MLB right now, at the Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas. We're going to take the 10th caller in the second half in the sports section of our show today. Only thing you have to do, caller, is just answer one of three questions, trivia questions that we're going to have. You can pick. You can choose. One will be about the MLB baseball, one would be about the NFL, and one would be about the NHL. So if you can answer one of those questions, you'll be the proud winner of two tickets to go see the Texas Rangers versus the Oakland A's at Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas.
All right. Right now, we're going to get into today's segment on the social and personal implications of Easter. And joining us today from the University of Virginia College at Wise is Professor Garrett Sheldon, whose scholarly interests are in early American political thought. His book, The Political Philosophy of Thomas Jefferson, published by James Hopkins University Press in 1991, became the first American book on Jefferson to be translated into Russian and published in Moscow in 1996. Professor Sheldon, we welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Yes, sir. Hey, Professor, tell us a bit about your work on the political philosophy of James Madison, and what would Jefferson say?
Well, I looked, because I do religion and politics, political theology, I looked at James Madison's religious Christian foundations of his view of politics and the Constitution. And the what would Jefferson say? Just looked at what Jefferson and early American founders might think about issues today.
Interesting. What do you think? I mean, real briefly, what do you think they would do with some of the issues we're dealing with today?
Well, they wouldn't like them.
I hear that.
They didn't talk about that stuff.
That's right. Well, let's get to the meat of the matter today. In your opinion, in our American society today, in our culture, people live very selfishly, if you will, and nobody seems to be willing to sacrifice their own personal will towards for the sake of someone else, if that makes sense. And I wanted to ask you, with where our culture is today, and with Easter being tomorrow, and this is Easter weekend, Good Friday, does Easter change that sort of mentality, that ideology in the American culture?
Yeah, I think because it's all about the sacrifice of Christ. Jesus willingly died on the cross for our sins and gave his life for us. He's the only man who is without sin, so he could take our sins upon him and we can have forgiveness of our sin. And so he gives an example to Christians to be sacrificial, to be loving and thinking about others and serving God. You know, in Ephesians, I believe it is, you probably know this better than I do, Myron. In Ephesians, it says, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it." That's just one example. Husbands, Christian husbands, are supposed to love their wives like Christ loved the church, and he died for the church. We're to sacrifice for our wives. We're to love them the way Christ loved the church. And that's not right. easy, and that's not part of our culture. But by the power of God and the Spirit of God, we can, you know, do that, try to do that, and God forgives us when we fail.
That's right. That's right. Tony, what are your thoughts?
It seems that in the Old Testament, a lot of times when God talked to his people, he always say, remember, remember, remember. That was a reoccurring theme. And when God talked to his people, it seems that we have gotten away from remembering what the sacrifice was, what the sacrifice meant. Why did he do what he did? When he, the night before he died, when he had the communion with his disciples, he said, "Do this in remembrance of me." And I believe that as days go on, we just forget about the sacrifice, and it becomes less of the sacrifice and less about God and more about us. I guess, I don't know, maybe because we are here and God seems like an unseen thing, but we know that he's real and very tangible because we can feel him in our lives and our hearts and our spirits. But oh man, it seems like we do a lot of forgetting. Even though he wakes us up every morning, we forget about him and his grace and his mercy. I don't know. I hate the direction that this is going.
Yeah, well, everything is for the now. I mean, you notice with
exactly
Facebook and media and texting, everything is instant. And everything is for the moment. And there isn't anything to remember. I mean, the students and people, young people I know especially, who just grow up in this culture of everything's immediate, everything's instant,
right.
Have no memory of the past, and so that's why we're losing our heritage. And you know, even in the communist countries, the family was the only thing left. They used to joke in Russia about, you know, these old women, old babushkas, who would tell their children and grandchildren about God and about the past in Russia. And one of the reasons the devil's trying to destroy the family is that that will break one means of transmitting the past.
There it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, because that's the only thing that will be left. If we're all just, you know, online and everything is just by the moment, we can be controlled. And we're just like robots. I mean, just second to second, that remembrance, not just of Christ's sacrifice and our redemption, but the remembrance of our own past, our own country's past, our traditions, our heritage, mm-hmm. is what mm-hmm. gives us a lot of valuable things and protects us from sin and the world and the devil. It makes us much less prone to be manipulated by others.
I understand, right. You know, this is not a theocratic society we live in, a government we live in, but in Dubai, I'm just going for example. This is not a serious point, but I'm just making an example. In Dubai, which is a Muslim country, man, during Ramadan, man, the eating places aren't even open during the daytime, right. because of their observance of their religion. You can't even eat doing it, that you can't take your lunch in public over there because of the observance of their religious faith. Man, I'm not saying that we should go to that extreme, but I believe that we as Christians should stand up more for our rights, because everybody say we're not being nice to other people because of our beliefs and because we tend to want to stand firm on our beliefs, when I think we should stand firm, stand our ground, and say, hey, you know what? You believe what you want to believe, but I'm going to stand firm on my beliefs.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's a constitutional right. The First Amendment Free Exercise Clause says that there will be no law against the free exercise of our religion, which includes expression, practice, worship, witnessing. And that is a divine right, and it's guaranteed by the Constitution. And I know it upsets people when we say, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I can't go along with that. God's law is against that. Mm-hmm. We believe that's going to lead to destruction. and we're accused of being hateful and bigoted and politically incorrect and
everything. That's that word. Wait a minute. That's a
curse
word.
But, you know, we got a right and a duty. I mean, if you're devout, as you mentioned, in those Muslim countries, when I grew up in Wisconsin in the 50s, I was telling my church, I had a Good Friday service at my church yesterday, and when I was growing up in Milwaukee, everything was closed on Good Friday.
There you go.
School mm-hmm. was closed. Everybody went to Mass or to church from 12 to 3 when Jesus hung on the cross. Mm-hmm. You were at church from 12 to 3 remembering what happened when Jesus was crucified and the sacrifice for us. And so it's hard to, how do you tell people they need to sacrifice and it's actually good for you? It's in God's will. God will bless you. The resurrection is all about life after death.
Okay.
And we've got a lot of dead things in our lives. A lot of things have died. A lot of things have died in our country. Mm-hmm. But the Christian message is there is life after death. Jesus rose on Easter from the dead.
Right.
But you guys hit on something. Both, I mean, it's really a compound issue or a very complicated issue, for lack of a better word. When you have guys, first of all, your government, you guys touch on the constitutional right. That depends on how you interpret it according to this current administration, if you will. And and so, you know, it depends. I totally agree with you guys about it, but it's hotly debated and largely disputed depending on your view of it. Again, you said respectively, Professor Sheldon, about Christ, about Christ's resurrection. But then you have guys, former Christians, such as Bart R. Ehrman, that have written things such as, did Jesus exist? You know, and they doubt the resurrection. You have guys like Wedderburn that basically say that it's all fiction, that it never happened, that it's made up. They, you know, they even challenge, you have scholars that largely debate if Israel ever really truly existed. According to the Christian Bible, that is just something, and it is laughable. But, you know, they do say that, well, Israel, there's no proof. There's no evidence. There's no evidence that Christ rose again. There's no evidence such and such and such, yada, yada, yada. So I think it's impacted the society for the simple fact that you have former Christians who believed, turn and publicly, very influential men, teach these things in seminaries, in modern day times, if you will. And then what are you contributing? That, to me, that's a social and personal implication, but they give a negative light on Christianity, if you will, on the belief. And this mechanism that they're implementing is destroying our culture because you have 50% of the people that believe it and 50% that don't.
Yeah, and they've been doing that since Christ walked this earth. There have been doubters,
that's right,
and skeptics and deniers and – that's going to be there. We just have to live with that and just ask for the same right to proclaim the truth as they have to proclaim the falsehood,
right,
and believe that there's power in the truth. This isn't just us. This is the power of God. We just do what he tells us to do, and then we trust him by faith to do his will and not worry about it. Just don't worry about it. Don't be anxious. Jesus said, be anxious for nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh.
Trust in God. And, you know, I don't worry. I mean, I'm sad to see our country going down the tubes. I really am. Because I see the pain and the suffering from that. I see the pain and destruction of broken marriages and families and children being hurt and abused and drugs. I see the suffering of that as a minister. And it's heartbreaking. I mean, it's tragic. And I grew up in a country that was much more secure, much more stable. Wasn't perfect, I could tell you. My family wasn't perfect.
No one.
But there was a culture of duty and reverence that prevented widespread sort of depravity and abuse that we see today.
That's right. you bring up marriage. You've touched on that, and I know last year we did a 5-part series on the family crisis in America, and I never will forget that we had Dr. Contreras on out of El Paso, and she said something that was very interesting, and it was the fact that she said she did not know what the church was doing. Now, both of our guests, Shannon Wolf, Dr. Shannon Wolf here from the Metroplex, and Ms. Contreras, both are doctors in marriage counselors, if you will, and both are Christians. But they both said that there's a underlying tone that you could say that has been set forth in our society, basically by the government playing a large role in this, but that the church has kind of taken, if you will, a step backwards, that going back to Ms. Contreras' point, that she doesn't know what the church is doing, because it's basically, from her standpoint, the church doesn't do enough to try to help families stay together. They wait until the point to where it's breaking apart and falling apart with our youth, with the families, with the fathers, you know, and mothers and such, to where they wait till it's all broken before they intervene, before they engage in it. And in both of their assessments, the church needs to do more. And yes, that's my point.
It's hard in the church you're dealing now. You're living in a, I think, a post-Christian culture. We're living in a, where a majority of people endorse homosexuality and abortion and non-Christian values. We're no longer a predominantly Christian culture, and the church has to minister to that. I think, you know, we do talk about marriage and family and parenthood and so on, but the main way you do that is you talk about the faith. You talk about the law of God and the consequences of breaking the law of God. Mm-hmm. And the consequences are misery and pain and destruction. I mean, the devil tempts with a moment's pleasure and then a lifetime of pain and suffering and disillusionment. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. what the church teaches. You know, God doesn't give us these laws and his spirit to be mean to us. It's because he loves us and he knows we're made in a certain way. Marriage is not perfect and easy, even for Christians, but he said it is not good for a man to be alone, you know. And
that's
when my
right.
wife takes a trip, I find that out. I mean, where is everything? I can't find anything.
Right.
What, the house is all dirty. What happened? I don't, you know. I tell you, man, it's not good for a man to be alone. He needs
exactly.
a wife.
That's right.
And it's not
that's
easy
right.
sometimes, but, you know, that's the way God made it. And men need a wife and women need a husband. And God says that. And when you got yeah. a society telling you, no, you don't, God's wrong. Just fool mm-hmm. around, promiscuity, adultery everywhere, and you want to drive yourself crazy. I tell my church this all the time. If you want to drive yourself crazy, fool around. I'm telling you,
oh,
you
Uh-oh.
Will
Uh-oh.
Drive, you will take your emotions and put them through a shredder.
Yes.
Yes.
And you will go crazy, especially women. And so God's law is to say, you know, you need some stability in your life.
Right.
Resist the temptation to immediate gratification. Follow
right.
God's law. You'll be happier in the long run. You'll be blessed. And it's just the truth. I mean, so you preach that about everything, about work, about family, about prayer, about everything.
Yes, sir.
And that will get through to a lot of young people, not everybody.
Right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come right back.
Duffy's Tennis Training. Come and check out our prices.
Can't be serious.
If tennis is your game, this is where you need to train. Duffy's Tennis Training. Call 817-371-0777.
back. You're listening to The Two on the BBS Radio Network with Myron, Tony, and our guest, Professor Garrett Sheldon. Professor Sheldon, if Easter is the defining moment in Christianity, why has it become more about Easter egg hunts and a bunny?
The Easter bunny.
Hey, man, yeah. Don't knock the Easter bunny.
Come on, well, now.
Yeah, you know, kids like the Easter bunny, and I don't think it's all bad, but I think it's our society doesn't want anything to be serious. We want everything to be light and funny, and, you know, I like funny things. I'm a funny guy, but it takes these solemn, serious, really important things and trivializes them. And that's basically what, you know, has been done to Easter. Rather than talk, it's not easy to talk about the crucifixion and the resurrection, but the church I grew up in as a boy, they talked about the crucifixion and the resurrection, not about the Easter bunny. And I got it. I mean, children get it. And I don't think that means you can't have Easter eggs, but you got to talk about the real stuff too. Children will listen to the serious stuff. But our society wants everything to be light and silly, non-threatening, non-serious, you know, don't get too serious here.
But you don't think it's commercialism? You don't think it's a distraction? Well, let's not talk about the crucifixion and let's talk about the candy and the chocolate eggs, which I like. But the point of it is, it's just, you know, don't you think it's kind of a, let's just distract them for a little while, you know,
yeah,
away
anything
from
that sells.
Thing.
I mean, part of commercial society, but commercial society is just the reality of human human greed and human desire for something quick and cheap. And so we market to that. So we say, well, what will people buy? And it's colorful eggs and bunnies, not serious faith.
Can I ask you, I know I didn't ask you this. Tony, I give you, I know you had a question, I think, a while ago. You were going to say something. I apologize.
Oh, no, I'm fine. No, go right ahead.
Do you think, Professor Sheldon, that the church itself, whether it's liberal or conservative, has kind of bought into that commercialism, if you will, to not be so serious about it?
It's a very tricky balance, you know. There's a very thin line. You need to be relevant. You need to minister to whatever culture you're in. And we're living in a commercial, depraved culture. And, you know, the Pope Francis' new book, The Joy of the Gospel, really talks, it's really causing a revival in the Catholic Church that church has to minister to people where they are. And we have be relevant. We have to be take people where they are. On the other hand, we have to hold the high standards of the faith. It's a tricky balancing act, and I don't have a formula. I just pray and ask God and ask the Holy Spirit to show me what balance to strike in any given situation.
I like that. Don't have a formula. That's right. It's not prescribed, right? But
no, we don't have a rule book. I don't. You know, sometimes I wish I had just laws and rules and regulations and just look it up and tell you what to do. But since Jesus, you know, he was always breaking the rules and he got in a lot of trouble.
That's right.
Right.
But that's because he was following the Spirit of God. And you notice he fulfills the law through the Spirit of God. And there are times when we have to, I'm telling you, when you minister to people, and I know you both know this, people get in situations, there is no rule book that you can use to deal with whatever mess people get into. You can only ask God's Spirit to show you, and most of the time, it's mercy, it's listening, it's help. I mean, you don't need to tell these people they're sinners. They know they're sinners. What they need to hear is the mercy and grace of God.
See, you can open the door for something else.
Yeah,
but I'm
whatever
not gonna go
God
there,
gives you to share, but that means I know, I'm sure sometimes I look wishy-washy and compromising, but you got to take people where they are.
Yes, sir.
And not judge them, and just be led by the Spirit as to how you minister to them.
Yes, sir.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. We have about 3 minutes left for this first segment, so I want to get this last topic into you, Professor. Does the Easter holiday, in your opinion, provide us an opportunity to talk about the finality of death and what that means for the possibility of morality or not?
Absolutely. I mean, Jesus died. He died on the cross. He was crucified. But then he was raised on Easter Sunday. He was resurrected. And it's all about there is death. There is end. In your physical lives, in our relationships, in our hopes, our jobs, there's a lot of death. A lot of things die. You know, they're gone. They're dead. Mm-hmm. But the Christian message is, by faith, there's life after death. God can give us new opportunities. He can give us new relationships. And finally, gives us eternal life in heaven with him because of Christ's sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Mm-hmm. What you think, Tony?
Yes, it's a great opportunity for us to witness to someone. Just like the professor said, we need to take upon ourselves this opportunity, because the churches are going to be full of people who haven't went to church, hadn't been to church since 2010, and probably won't go back to church again until 2020. So it is the perfect opportunity to tell someone about the sacrifice, life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ.
That's right. That's right. Professor Shelton, we certainly thank you for your time you spent with us today. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can get in contact with you and where they can purchase some of your books from?
Well, you can email me at my college address. It's just gws@uvawise.edu. All my books are on Amazon, Garrett Ward Shelton. And I appreciate being on. I always enjoy talking to you guys. God bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, you as well. I appreciate it. Good hearing your voice.
It's a joy.
Yes, sir, it is. And we it's always an honor for us as well, sir. And
we'll do it again. God bless you.
You too. We'll see you next time. Thank you. All right, and before we go to the next hour, I want to let you guys know that you guys need to get out to the Supernatural Weekend that Pastor Corby Bush is having at the Greater Harvest Church in Dallas, Texas. That's Greater Harvest Church. You can Google it, and you can find it off of Overton Road in Dallas, Texas. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back, because, Tony, what time is it?
It's time to talk sports. You know that, man. Come on.
All right. We'll be right back.
Duffy's Tennis Training. Come and check out our prices.
Can't be serious.
If tennis is your game, this is where you need to train. Duffy's Tennis Training. Call 817-371-0777.
All right, you're listening to The Two on the BBS Radio Network, and it's time for sports.
Yes, sir. Let's do it. Let's do it.
I think coach out there in the field probably getting on one of his players right now. So who knows? We'll get coach here. We'll get coach on here in a minute, man. Oh, you know what? Before I forget, let's hit the listeners with the trivia questions, Tony.
Oh, okay, okay.
Let them know.
Check it out. All right. The 10th caller, you'll have the opportunity to win two tickets to the Texas Rangers, a game against the Oakland A's. Now, you have three trivia questions that you can answer. One is from the NHL. When was the last year the Dallas Stars made the playoffs, and how far did they go? When was the last year the Dallas Stars made the playoffs, and how far did they go? Number two, NFL question. What record-setting quarterback was the NFL's 82nd draft pick in 1979? Come on now, you can get this one. What was the record, name of the record-setting quarterback that was drafted 82nd overall in 1979? Number three, who holds the record for the most innings pitched in a major league season? Who holds the record for the most innings pitched in a major league season? If you can answer one, just one of those three questions, you could be sitting and watching the Texas Rangers play the Oakland A's at Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas.
All right. So those are the three topics. So the three trivia questions. In order for you to win the tickets, you got to answer one of the three. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes, just answer one of the three questions, and you will be the proud owner of two tickets.
Can I answer the question?
No, man. Look.
Come on. Can I answer?
Look, man.
I want some tickets.
No, bro. No, see, you're always trying to get over. Always trying to get over. Come on, man.
All right, man. Look. Let's go ahead and get on with the talking points.
All right.
What's your thoughts for the week?
Check this out. I want to hit you with this section. We're going to call it hit and run. I'm going to hit you with a couple of questions, and you run in any direction you want to with them. Just let the listeners know what you think about the questions, and we're going to try to keep it moving fast because we want to get a couple of questions in. It's just some main topics of the day. So we're going to start with football. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, check this out. Your team, the San Francisco 39ers. Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. San Francisco 49ers. My math is a little off today. San Francisco 49ers, they got two players, man, two high-name players that's having a few legal issues. Do you think the 49ers are the new bad boys, the new quote-unquote Dallas Cowboys of the NFL right now, or is it just dumb luck?
Well, first of all, you know, you can't mention the greatest team ever with the sorriest team of all time.
Cut your mic off.
You're going to have to do something. You can't put the 49ers in the same category as the Cowgirls the Cowboys, if you will.
Here we go.
But to answer your question, we've always been bad. You know, we've always been bad. We just look good doing it. And the thing about it, though, with your point, though, I don't really see them as I'm going to be real here for a minute. I don't really see them as bad boys. I see them as guys not really having mentors, not really having the right type of guys to mentor them. Because, you know, back in the day, from our generation, when players came into the league, they were kind of surrounded by mentors, some of those vets that will pull you to the side and make you act right. You know what I mean? Fit some knowledge. I don't think they're really bad boys. I just think that they're a couple of young guys that's been given to steal your insight, that's been hit with fame, fortune, and they don't know how to deal with it. You know, they're kind of ignorant to the fact of their decision making. You know, they're making poor decisions, man. So they kind of need a little guidance there. But, we're going to take a quick break, Tony, and we're going to come right back with Coach. Hopefully he didn't got off of yelling at his players out there today. So we'll bring him on in a minute.
That sounds like a plan.
All right. We'll be right back. Duffy, you with us, Coach?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Oh, doing good. Coach, you doing all right?
Oh, yeah. Just on the way to another lesson.
That sounds good to me.
And I wasn't yelling at my players, not yet. That comes
you know how it is, Coach. Hey, did you hear the question, Coach?
Yeah, I definitely heard it, and I gotta agree with you on that one, Myron. They, I think their name should be called the Cowboys because they're definitely not cowmen. I mean, you got Dez Bryant and all that hoopla. So,
but
yeah,
we won't get into that.
We won't get into that, man. But you know, I think seriously. I mean, they do need mentors. They need some kind of program. NFL, maybe it's there in place now. I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. I couldn't consider these guys the bad boys. I mean, I haven't seen the 30 for 30 on ESPN yet for the Detroit Pistons, but in my eyes, those guys were the bad boys. Me,
yes,
you guys
right.
Need something on the field to be considered bad boys. These guys, I don't consider them bad boys. I consider them young idiots.
That's
deep, Coach. That's right, though.
I like that. Yeah, especially talking about the 49ers, young idiots. I hear you. But moving right along.
Cut his mic.
Move right along. Coach, check this out. I want you to put on your GM hat right now. You've been promoted from coach to GM. Colin Kaepernick's extension is coming up this year.
So I'm Jerry Jones now?
Would you sign Colin Kaepernick before the season, or would you wait till after the season? Number two, would you want Alden on your team?
Kaepernick, I mean, you got to do – I think he signed him while he's hot right now. I mean, he's got you to the Super Bowl. He's got you to the playoffs every time. I mean, what did Alex Smith ever do? I mean, so I think you got to strike while the iron's hot as far as Kaepernick goes. Alden, you know, that guy, he's like a cat, you know. I don't know if he's got nine lives, but I give him one more chance, and then I give him a pretty hefty fine or suspension. Maybe he'll wake up and realize, hey, I mean, you know, these guys got to realize it's not just a Sunday job. It's a year-round, you know, 24/7, 365, you know, image as well as the playing on the field. So I think they got to realize it's not just a Sunday job. It's not just once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I got you.
I have to go with you on that one, Coach. I agree. You signed Cap because he's one of the hottest commodities in the league, plus the boy gets it done, you know, period. Alden just needs some mentor. He needs some help. You know, I think as a general manager, you be smart and you take players that are productive. And that's it, period. Moving on.
Let's talk about some basketball, guys. The playoffs are up on us. Have you guys been watching any basketball? Well, I guess the first game is today, so you haven't been able to watch anything. But, Coach, I know if you looked at it and milled over it a little bit, do you see any upsets in the playoffs, in the first round of the playoffs, between the 1 and the 8s or the 2s and the 7s? Do you see anyone that can upset, two upset in a 7 or one upset in an 8?
I'm thinking Atlanta. I'm thinking Atlanta's going to give Indiana a little tough run.
Mm-hmm.
I think they get a little tough run. I think, you know, let's see if Indiana's worthy of that number one seed.
I got you.
And then the 2 versus 7, you know, you got the, well, they're not, it's not 2 versus 7, but, you know, you got the Mavs and Spurs. I mean, that's going to be a good game right there, a good series. I mean, you know, they're separated by 4 hours right there, so it's, you know, it's going to be Dirk versus Duncan. You know, one guy plays inside, one guy obviously plays outside.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see any upset as far as the Spurs and the Mavericks go. The clinic, as I call them, the clinic will win.
God.
And I know that's how you feel, because you have to say that whenever Dirk and company gets on the floor when they play Duncan and company. But the Spurs will win. I mean, I think it's going to be a game. I think it's going to go. I think the Spurs win in 6 games. I'm just going to tell you, I really do. I don't think it'll go 7. I think they'll win in 6. As far as the team, though, that I think you would see an upset, I don't think it's going to be between the number 8, the number 1 and 8, or the 2 and the 7. I think it's going to be the number 4 and the number 5. I think the Rockets are a team that you have to watch.
I do, too.
I believe that. I mean, I think the Rockets are a team that you're definitely going to have to watch. And I think, I know you guys going to say, man, cut his mic off, but I really think the Grizzlies might give the Thunder a run for their money.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Shut your mic off. You don't know what you're talking about.
Tough defense out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Michael, shut him off. That Bulls and Wizards.
I don't have a mic, guys.
That's something. That's something. That's something. That's that Bulls and Wizards going to be something. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Byron.
Oh, I know we got to move on, but I was going to tell you this year. After we get past round one, I think in the second round. Correct me if I'm wrong, Coach. And Tony, won't the Heat play the Pacers in the second round? If the Pacers win and get past the Hawks and the Heat get past the Bobcats, which we know will happen, won't those two teams play each other in the second or the third round? I said second round, but I think they'll probably face each other in the third round, right?
Yeah, they'll face it in the conference championship.
Yeah, they'll be conference finals.
Before they even get close to facing each other, yeah.
I'm going to go out on the limb. I think the Pacers beat the Heat.
Pacers. What was the season series?
Huh?
What was the season series? You know, guys. Was it Indiana 3-2 or something? Or?
Ooh, now that's a good question. I'm not sure.
I think they even the season. I think they were 2-2.
2-2 or 3-2?
Something like that. But I know that I can't remember. I think they're pretty even. I'm not sure though, Coach, to tell you the truth. But I think the Pacers are a much better team this year, and I think they will beat the overrated Heat. I really do.
Wow. Overrated. All right, I like it.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Everybody, I'm sorry, Tony. Man, LeBron, and I know we off topic here a little bit, but we got a little time. LeBron is who gives themselves the title, the king, and all that garbage, man. I mean, LeBron is way highly overrated. Kevin Durant is a much better player, and everybody knows it.
There's only one king. It's Elvis Presley.
Okay, Coach.
I have to agree with Coach on that, man. Oh man, like LeBron, but hey, LeBron sells tickets. People like to see him. There's always a chosen one in every sport that everyone likes to go see. LeBron is the one, so I guess we just have to live with it.
The chosen one we celebrating this weekend, right?
Oh well, you're right there. I'm in sports, in sports.
Hey, I had to get you outside.
Yeah. You're right about that. Sticking with the NBA, who is your league MVP? And who was your coach of the year? Who was your league MVP? Who was your coach of the year?
I got to go with not KG. I got to go with KD. I got to go with Kevin Durant, that one. That's pretty much hands down right there.
Mm.
Yeah.
And coach of the year? That's tough. You got the Pacers coach. You got Popovich, Doc Rivers in L.A. A dark horse? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to be like Myron, go out on a limb here. I'm going to go with Jason Kidd, Brooklyn.
Mm. Even with the glass of water incident on the court, you still going to go with him, huh?
I don't know. Oh, mind that one. I said a dark horse. I said a dark horse.
Yeah.
Hey, come on.
I got to backtrack on that one.
I'm biased, so I say Pop. But to tell you the truth, I'd like to see Doc. Doc get it. I really would, because I think he deserves it.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go with Durant and Doc on that one. I really think Doc has set himself head and shoulders above some of the other coaches right now, but what he's working with and how he's advanced that team. Let's move toward golf. I know the Masters was last weekend, Coach, and I'm a little confused because all I'm hearing about is Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth. Why is he so hot? And is he the next big thing in golf?
He's hot because he's got 6 top 10 finishes. And he's a 20-year-old kid from Dallas. You know, I mean,
yeah,
Bubba
exactly.
Watson. Bubba Watson, that's his home course right there. I mean, he's from Atlanta. So, you know, he's congratulations to him on his second green jacket there. But, yeah, I mean, this kid's 20 years old. I mean, you know, I was telling some guys on Sunday watching the Masters, and I was like, you know, you can't say that this guy's like, you know, if he loses, you know, he choked the last round. You know, he's 20 years old. I mean, he's a young kid, but he's not really a young kid. I got to throw that word phenom in there, and I'll throw it around very often. But you know, I got to say he's a phenom, man. He's 20 years old. He's went to UT for 1 year. But like I said, he's got 6 top 10 finishes.
The boy is bad. The boy is bad. Is Tiger being replaced?
By another girlfriend or?
Want to follow Jordan rather than Tiger now?
He's being replaced by another phenom. I mean, you know, this kid, I think he's going to win his first major. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say next year's Masters. I'm going to say he's hungry for that title that he kind of lost out on this year, and I think he's going to win his first major next year. But, yeah, I mean, Tiger's being replaced by another phenom. Like, you know, most sports, they just, you know, they groom these guys at a young age, and, you know, one guy comes along like LeBron, you know, and just like Tiger was, and, you know, this young guy coming in like that, so.
I got you. Let's move this into hockey real quick. The playoffs in hockey are starting this week. We had a very, very interesting first night the other night. We had three games going to overtime, and one of the matches that actually had three overtimes. Who do you like in the East, and who do you like in the West, Coach?
Oh, man. Am I staying unbiased or what?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I gotta go with my New York Rangers. That's right, the New York Rangers, not the Texas Rangers. But they had a good win tonight, won all the third period. Thanks to a rookie mistake that gave the Rangers a 4-minute power play. They scored two power play goals in a matter of 42 seconds, I believe. And they scored three goals in the third period and, you know, pulled out the win 4-1 over the Flyers. Overall, though, I mean, Boston is a top dog there. You know, you can't leave out, obviously, Pittsburgh. Boston and Pittsburgh are the top front runners from the Eastern Conference, but I still like the Rangers. Western Conference, you know, you got Colorado with Patrick Waugh, first-year coach. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 56 wins, I believe, they had. And right. So, out of the Western Conference, I like Colorado or Anaheim. Anaheim's now got a 2-0 lead on the Stars, and Boston actually lost last night, 1-0 to Detroit, so... But I like Boston from the East, and like, Colorado or Anaheim, I got to give the nod to Anaheim for more experience. But like I said, you got the first-year coach at Patrick Waugh, so we'll see.
We'll see. Coach, did you know, you mentioned Boston and Detroit playing. Do you know this is the first time since 1957 that those two teams have played? Detroit have them 1-0 right now. Who do you think are going to come out of that? I guess you said Boston already, but why do you think they're going to come out of that?
You know, Detroit came on kind of barely made the playoffs, and that makes their 23rd year in a row, I believe, of Detroit making the playoffs. So it's not, it'll be kind of, you know, unimaginable not to have the Red Wings in the playoffs. But, you know, Boston's, they had 117 points, I believe, something like that. So they got tough. You know, they got tough guys. They got Marchand. They got, Zdena Chara. He's, I don't know, like 8 feet tall or something. Got a slap shot about 110 miles an hour. So they're just a tough team. I think, you know, that first game of the playoffs is always tough, no matter what sport it is, because you kind of feel your way around the first game. But I think Boston will come and take it like 4-2.
Yeah, okay, I got you. Detroit, man, I think it's been 26 years in a row that they've made the playoffs. Like you said, it wouldn't be a playoffs without them being in it. But – like a lot of people say, the playoffs is a different season. It's something different. So I think we better throw away some of the stuff that happened during the season for Detroit, man. I think I'm going to roll with Detroit over Boston. That's what I've been looking at, and that's what I picked. And I'm just happy that they're 1-0, but I think I'm going to roll with Detroit over Boston just this time.
Tony, didn't you roll with Florida in that national championship game?
Move right along.
Yeah. Good call, Coach.
Moving right along. Hey, okay, you want to go back to that? UConn, man, my goodness. UConn, who would have guessed it? The first-year coach, what do you think about that? Second-year coach, but in his second season, he took his team not just to the Final Four, but he won the national championship. What do you think about the future of that program?
It's nothing but bright. I mean, if Ollie stays there, he's going to be like the Butler coach, you know. Now, you know, somebody wins the national championship game, and like Butler coach got there 2 years in a row, and now where's he at? He's coaching the Boston Celtics. So, you know, you're that, you know, kind of like Kaepernick, you know. you're that hot commodity. You know, people are going to be coming, looking after you, signing you for, you know, a big contract, whatever. So, you know, when you win, winning breeds that long-term contracts and lots of money. So we'll see what happens as far as that goes. I hope he stays there. You know, I mean, I think it'll be good for the UConn program. Fresh blood, obviously, Jim Calhoun was there for so many years. So
right.
I think that's a good thing, good bright future for UConn.
If you could, would you change the rules for the NCAA basketball players coming out so soon? You got the two players coming out of Duke this year. And, of course, you got some players coming out of Kentucky, which they always come out of Kentucky after one and done. Would you change that rule, or how do you feel about that?
I think they should go at least 2 years. That's my take on it. Get 2 years of good college experience. You know, when you're 18, you're still, you know, some people are not mature enough yet. You're still 18. You know that when you're 20, I know it's only 2 years, but, you know, sometimes that 2 years makes a big difference on kids. You got to realize they're still young kids becoming young adults, you know, young men, whatever. So I like to see them go at least 2 years. I think that first year, they're not getting, what are they taking, basket weaving and you know, classes like that.
I think
you give them
ballroom
two good years. Yeah, exactly. I think you give them 2 years, get their, you know, AA degree or something like that, just to give them 2 good years of college experience besides the basketball, but just two good years of college experience. I don't mean partying and having fun. That was fun for me. But anyway, that's another subject.
Well, to go back one, because you see Tony moved by real quick on the UConn issue there. But with the players, when you talk about, do you agree with Shabazz Napier being the MVP? Or do you think it should have went to DeAndre Daniels? Because in my opinion, I think it should have went to DeAndre Daniels. To me, there was no team that had an answer for that kid.
Yeah, I think Napier. I mean, I agree with you there. I think Napier had some turnover issues that, you know, almost cost him the game. Obviously, so I would agree with you there. It should have gone to Daniels, but I mean, you know, Napier had a good game, so you know, he just had some costly mistakes at times, but it obviously didn't cost him the game, so which is good.
Right. What you think, Tony? You think? What do you think about it?
I think Florida got cheated. That's what I think.
Oh,
Shabazz Napier, man, is the man. Man, he had a great, not just game. He had a great tournament. Man, he had a very, very good tournament. And I think that kind of lends to. I know he was a senior, but that kind of lends to what the coach was saying. They need that time in college to prepare themselves for the NBA. I believe he's going to move to the next level. I don't know how far he's going to go to the next level, but I believe the kid is coachable. I think at first he wasn't very coachable. Listen to some of the reports about the about that UConn team, and Coach Ollie came in and he got to the guy. He reached him. For some way, somehow, he reached him. And when he reached him, he turned him around to be a pretty good player. Now, he's got a lot to learn, but right now, the dude is tough. He's real tough.
All right.
All right, Tony, let me ask you this. So you think Florida got cheated, huh? You think the Cowboys got cheated the last 20 years?
Well, it's been a good show. I appreciate you, Coach. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, man. We gotta wrap this up. We got a little time before we have to close out the show. But Coach, you got a few seconds to hang out, or you got to get back out there on the field. I mean, on the court.
No, I'm good. Yeah.
Okay.
Keep it going.
So this goes to a question that Tony had threw out about Jim Irsay. So Tony, I'll let you ask Coach about it.
Okay. Coach, check it out. I know I promoted you to general manager a minute ago. You've been so good, except for your Dallas Cowboy comments. You've been so good, we're going to move you up to commissioner of the NFL. Check this out. Okay, you've just been told about Jim Irsay and the problems that he's had and what he's going through right now. And first of all, let me say this. I pray that the guy finds help. I pray that he gets healthy. I pray that he's blessed in his personal life. Forget about his football life, but his personal life, to get his life back on track. But now, you being the commissioner, What would you do in this situation? How would you handle this situation? What powers would you exercise in this situation?
Well, that is a good question, Tony. You hold these guys up to the players. I mean, to such a high standard. I think these guys, the owners, need to be held, you know, the same way, if not a little higher. They're putting a product out there for us to, as fans, to enjoy. You know, I think, and I agree, though, I hope he gets his life back together, but, you know, they're putting a product there on the field and off the field that, you know, that us fans, you know, love. I think, you know, it's hard to say. You know, Myron and I had a conversation today. It's hard to say because, you know, you're talking to a grown man, telling another grown man how to kind of, you know, behave, and, you know, but that's tough. I mean, I think, you know, I think he needs to give back, if he hasn't done so at all or recently, to, you know, to some community service in the area, possibly, like I said, with Brian the other day, you know, if you're going to hold Sean Payton, you know, for that whole ordeal, suspend him for a year, you know, maybe you do something like that with Irsay, you know? I don't know what else to say about that.
I got to jump on you, man. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tony, then I'm going to respond.
Okay, well, I was just going to have like a part two. You said it's tough to handle Irsay, a grown. Is it tough to handle Irsay because he's an owner? Because it hadn't been tough to handle the other grown men, the players, when they did something wrong. Is it tough because he's Irsay, the owner? Or what do you mean when you say it's tough?
It's tough because I'm going to let you answer, Coach, but let me jump on. Let me get this in, please. It's tough because the other players on that football team, like you guys keep – I know, like Coach said, we talked about this the other day, and I see it totally different than you guys do. Coach, you brought up Sean Payton, and Tony, you bring up the other players or whatever, Goodell and whatnot. But mind you, the reason it's tough for Irsay is because Irsay is approximately worth $1.2 billion to – the NFL. Do you honestly believe that that's an easy man to handle?
You know, $1.2 billion, huh, to the NFL, that he can't afford a driver? I mean, come on.
Well, you don't want a driver, you know, when you're riding around getting high. You don't really want too many people to know you're getting high, do you? I mean, I'm just asking.
Everybody knows now, though. It could have been one guy, the driver. Now everybody knows.
Hey, if he gave me enough money, I would have drove him, and I wouldn't have told nobody.
Right? I would have taken the .2 billion. I don't care about the one. I'll take the .2.
The .2. Do you feel me?
Oh, man. Hey, man. But I mean, seriously, it's a never-ending. I mean, it's complicated, but at least Irsay's in treatment. At least that's what we're led to believe. But, I mean, it's like the Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton sort of issue. These guys can do what they want to do regardless. And they can – I mean, I'll put it like this. At the end of the day, it's all about money. We know it. I agree with what you say, Coach. I agree with your aspect too, Tony. But I just don't think that the NFL is not – they're not going to do anything with this man. He generates too much revenue for him. So he can do whatever he want to do. The only way I think that this changes, as bad as it may sound, is if these owners go out there and hurt somebody or do something really, really bad that it damages the image, and then they'll decide. But even then, that may not be enough. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because
right.
Yeah, money's not the answer for everything. And I don't think it – me personally, I don't care how much money you have, it doesn't excuse your behavior, in my opinion. But it's relative.
I totally agree.
It's relative, though, you know, to these leagues, to the NBA, to the NFL and all these major sports, even Hollywood itself, if you just look at it all the way across the board. What you think?
So, Commissioner Myron, you're telling me just because this guy has a lot of money that you're not going to do anything to him? Come on, man.
No, I mean, I'm going to put it like this. I'm going to be cautious the way I approach it. I mean, very cautious.
Why? Why? Well, you were willing to wield an axe on the players. Why not? You have the power to do it. You have the power to do it. Wield an axe on this owner. Set a precedent. You wield an axe on the general manager and the head coach of the Saints. Why don't you do it right now?
Okay, I'm going to tell you why. let's suppose, and this is politics, your favorite word, but I mean, it's like this. It's just like dealing with Bill Gates and Microsoft. Do you chop Bill Gates' head off? You know, if you destroy, let's say, the owner of the team, how many people does this guy give a job to? And then we're not just talking about the players on the field. We're talking about the people behind the scenes and everything else. Because of the Colts and what he does, because of his organizations, you think about the contributions to that city, to the team, and everything at large. It goes way beyond Jim Irsay. It's bigger than you know. So I look at it in a corporate aspect, and from a business perspective, you have to make the right business decision, even if that means that it doesn't look right to the naked eye like us. You know what I mean? There's more involved with that. If you destroy Irsay, how many other lives do you destroy in the process? It's almost kind of like a utilitarian perspective, and I don't want to get into all that, but I mean, it's like, do you hurt one at the cost of hurt? I mean, do you deal with one guy at the sake of destroying other people? Or do you deal with it cautiously? I think it puts Roger Goodell in a very difficult position. It's a hard decision to make on how do you deal with this guy, because he's not your average Joe. You know what I'm saying?
So, okay. In Dallas, we had a story about this young man that killed four people when he was driving drunk. A 16-year-old killed four people driving drunk. He got a very light sentence. A very light sentence, and it was thought because his family had money. Okay, so how many more people will this young kid kill before we say that's enough? Okay, I'm not trying to gang up on this young kid. I'm saying, how much more trouble does a person have to do? How much more problems a person has to create before someone has the excuse my terminology here, has the guts enough to say that's enough?
But that's different. That's different, Tony. I mean, come on, Coach, chime in here. I mean, that's different, right? That's two totally different things, right? I mean, because you're taking a guy like, I mean, you have to understand what I'm saying. Okay, let's just look at Jerry Jones. If you put Jerry Jones, Jim Irsay, all these owners are filthy rich, man. It's like taking owners of corporate companies, and I'm talking Fortune 500 companies. These NFL teams are Fortune 500 companies, and that's different. You can't compare them to people like us, man. I mean,
if you're gonna come down on Jim Irsay for making one bad mistake, then you know you're gonna come really hard on him. What about Jerry Jones? Probably his mistake for the last 20 years.
Thank you.
But Jerry wasn't on drugs. Jerry wasn't on drugs.
He wasn't caught
with them. He wasn't caught. Now he might have been on drugs when he was drafting some people.
I told you they caught you. Coach, do you remember when they caught Jerry Jones in the club drinking one time, drunk, talking to fans?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Okay, he was in the club. How many other people went in the club drunk? You know what I'm saying?
Hey, if Jerry Jones could have drafted Uwe Blob for the Cowboys, he would.
Thank you. I never said the man was smart. I just said he wasn't on drugs.
I think he took Uwe Blob in the first round. He took Deadlift Shrimp in the second round.
Hey, Deadlift Shrimp had a nice little career going on for a minute there. Hey.
Yeah, he did.
Oh man! All right,
Coach. That's good.
Okay,
times.
So what's the closing? What's the closing remarks on Irsay, man? What you feel about it?
Come down on him hard and set a precedent. Set a precedent. Take him away from the operations of the team for a little while. Let him get his life back together and invite him back. Let him do some, like Coach said, to kind of go along with what Coach said. Let him do some stuff in the community and then let him get himself together and come back.
You weren't saying that when they caught the playmaker. You said, give him another chance. Give him another chance. He made a mistake. You weren't saying that with the playmaker, number 88.
Yes, sir. But he was doing his dirt in what was called the White House. He wasn't on the street trying about to kill somebody.
Okay.
The old double standard.
Yeah, thank you, Coach. I'm glad you said it. I didn't.
Oh, y'all just mad because the playmaker was making plays on y'all.
Please.
Jeez.
Wow.
I couldn't stop him on the field, so y'all wanted to stop him off the field. I understand. It's hard being a Cowboy. It's hard. You know, it's hard. I understand.
It's hard. I know, it's hard. It's hard for you. because you see what I have to deal with? He lives in a false reality.
It's even harder being a Cowboys fan.
Right now it is. Right now it's tough. It is real tough.
Oh, man.
You just make sure Eli get that old raggedy ankle back together in time. That's what you need to do, Coach.
Yeah, we signed Josh Freeman. I don't know why.
Oh boy, y'all gonna go a long way with that guy.
Yeah.
Freeman, hey, it wasn't bad. I think it was a smart move, really. You gotta have some insurance you can really find. I mean, you know, hey man, you guys need somebody. Y'all need a coach, a offensive line. Y'all need pretty much everything.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and bail a cap out so y'all can have a quarterback next season.
Wow. Oh, man.
We're having
it.
Fun.
I love it. Hey, we're going to have to
I'm glad he said it, not me.
What'd you say?
I'm glad he said it, not me.
See, Coach, you're an upstanding figure in the community. You can't say stuff like this.
I can take it, though, but I won't say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, what Coach say? What you say? I say what you wanted, what you can't say.
Exactly.
There you go.
Hey, man. Hey, it's been a pleasure, Coach. We enjoyed your time today, man.
Love you,
hey,
man.
Hey, Coach, let everybody know where they can come and visit the Academy, man.
Yeah, it's the website is Duffy's, D-U-F-F-Y-S. TennisTraining.com. I actually had a call from California a few minutes ago, about 35, 40 minutes ago, right before you guys called. So hopefully those phone calls will roll in. But, yeah, they can check out www.duffysTennisTraining.com or, again, the number 817-371-0777. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. You guys have a happy Easter.
You as well, you guys, Coach. Man, we love you.
Enjoy it. See you next time. Right, Tony, wrap, take us home, brother.
Man, we love you guys, man. We appreciate all the listeners. We pray that you guys have a great weekend. We pray you have a great celebration. Spend time with your family this weekend. That's what it's all about.